morning and welcome everyone to Live Dimer Sunday for April 1st, 2012. Hoyo Kubose here. Let's begin right away with our special guest today to give us a Dharma glimpse, Jim Morford of Temperance, Michigan. He's a longtime disciple of Reverend Guillaume Kubose, dating from the early 70s in Chicago. And just as sort of background, he's a stargazer. He's an amateur astronomist. He has a nice big telescope, and he travels some of his, since he's retired, with he and his wife Linda, they travel, and they coincide their travel with where certain eclipses or things like this are occurring, you know, in certain spots over the world he would go. And he also has a computer program that, you know, you put in certain coordinates and the telescope will go right to that spot, different constellations. They also are very active in the Model A Ford Club, you know, antique automobiles, complete with period fashions and clothes, and they own the, and they travel and so forth. So, without further ado, for today's Dharma Glimpse, Jim Morford.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to talk with you this morning. And I'm going to set up a little bit this Dharma Glimpse. I have telescopes and have made a hobby of astronomy to a certain extent, and have had subscriptions to the two major magazines, Sky and Telescope and Astronomy. And a couple of months ago, I needed to clean out all of the old ones, and I was gathering them all up and eventually managed to give them to a high school science teacher. In the process, I ran across a magazine that I had obviously purchased at some time in the past called Shambhala Sun. And this is a magazine from Wisdom Publications, publisher of Buddhist books, 199 Elm Street, Somerville, Massachusetts. And I mention that because I want to read from that. This was a July of 2004 issue. And the reason that I was interested in this is we find ourselves in the political season once again with the elections for the president coming up in this year. And this particular publication had the following article. It's called Joining Heaven and Earth, Where Dharma Meets the Art of the Possible, a Discussion of Buddhism and Politics. And this article consisted of interviews with three individuals, including Jerry Brown and Roshi Bernie Glassman. Of course, Jerry Brown, it says mayor of Oakland, California, and now, as we know, he's the mayor of California, I think. And Roshi Bernie Glassman is a man who lives, I believe, still in Yonkers, New York, and I had the pleasure of meeting a couple of times. But I want to read from this July of 2004 issue of Shambhala Sun. It starts out like this. Shambhala Sun, Perhaps the best place to begin this conversation is to offer a fundamental definition of politics, which is a word with many levels of meaning. Mayor Jerry Brown, the political is about the collectivity, the nation, the state, the city, the community. It refers not to personal choice. I want to do this or I want to do that, but to working with other people to arrive at some operating agreement about issues that are important. Politics is different from contemplation. It's different from personal friendship, although the political implies like-minded people sharing certain beliefs and certain understandings of what the good is and what the bad is. Politics is about working through divisive issues because, by definition, in a democratic society, there is lots of disagreement. Politics refers to a process of struggle, of competition, of discussion, and ultimately of agreeing on certain actions by certain methods. Politics requires people listening to each other and finding some accommodation that will allow them to live peacefully in the same place. Period. That's the end of that particular exchange. And then I want to read from Roshi Glassman, who makes a contribution as follows. Glassman, I use the metaphor of a carpenter. The carpenter has a bag of tools that he has accumulated over his lifetime. Somebody calls and says there is something wrong with their door. Coming in from a standpoint of knowing would be like having your hand stuck to a particular tool. Maybe it's stuck to the hammer. So you come and start banging away at the door. The not knowing stance is that you come with all these tools and you bear witness to the door. Where is it sticking? What is the problem? Then you pull out the right tool. It is very important to have lots of tools, to have the vision and ideas you talk about, but not to the point where you are stuck on anything in particular as you approach the situation. You are coming with deep listening, with deep openness, and then you use the right tool. So those thoughts were very interesting to me in our present context. And it seems as if we get very involved in the idea that we need to have convictions and we need to bring those convictions to the discussion, and then we need to make sure that our convictions are carried through in some way. And I thought these two gentlemen presented what is possibly a moderating, opposing view of that. Not exactly opposing, because there's nothing wrong. It's very important to have convictions, and it's very important to express them and to defend them. But like is said in this article, politics is really about coming together. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised to find a message coming from the teachers that we're familiar with. And so I was very interested to have run across that, and wanted to share it this morning. And I appreciate your listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. This topic, I guess when we have CNN News and election coverage that's going to be coming, going down the home stretch for November elections, and we think about what's going on in America. There have been some recent things on the internet and also in Buddhist publications that deal with this. So along with this topic about our style of life, our values, and Buddhism's role in this, let us consider first, from the internet, there was an article by I haven't got permission, but he's a emeritus professor of economics and PhD writer who's talking about the American dream. And he says it's been hijacked. And political liberty, economic opportunity, social mobility, the often quoted Declaration of Independence, you know, right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, he says now with competitive consumerism that sort of masquerades as the dream, and the dream has shifted really. And this shift began in the 1980s when wage levels became stagnant and all income increases were seized by the wealthy. And those who had the money just got more. And redistribution of income bankrupt the dream. Wealth is the thing that, you know, competition, selfishness. Now, so this is very much tied to economics, to politics. If there's no political consensus about shared values and how we distribute the wealth, well, too many people are unwilling to share the dream, the American dream. Everything's polarized and unstable in our political system. We can't agree how to spend on health care, national defense, education, much less on supporting what underlies the American dream, where all people can, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How can you reclaim the dream if you can't, you're not willing to share this? And then in response to this email, one of my Dharma friends out in Atlanta, he says, let's see. He says, okay, the dream is not dead. Look at the power of the new, and it's under quote here, telephone, telegraph, Pony Express, etc., the internet, the Facebook, iPhone, Twitter, iMac, etc. This, as things progressed in telecommunication, right now, our technology is 1,000 times better at communicating thoughts, ideas. The power to communicate the ideas, to create flash mobs, instantly recall videos of long ago stances and positions. The younger generation is just beginning to learn how to use all these tools at their disposal. Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and the ilk must counter the cotches in this powerful game of mind control versus mind opening. I am very optimistic about the future. Look at the average age of the tech billionaires. It's rare to see a Tea Party person among them. If each of us does a little something to open minds to the benefits that all religions actually teach, to help one another, honor others, respect others, we'll get through this hard patch together. It may take a while, but it will happen. And then, in the recent Buddhist Churches of America Wheel of Dharma, again, I have not really asked permission, but my good friend, Professor Dr. Alfred Bloom in Hawaii, writes an article in the Wheel of Dharma about Buddhism, a paradigm for society. And he's making the same overall point about individualism that gets distorted or misused in terms of its philosophical standpoint. And he makes the point that it's better maybe from a Buddhist standpoint to speak of the person rather than the individual. See, when you say individual, then it seems to imply you stand alone. It stresses independence. Whereas when you say the person, well, that's the individual in the context of relationships, in community, in family, its place in the world. And of course, this means that this is the Buddhist principle of interdependency, which is the core element of its philosophy and teaching, that nothing is totally independent or self-existing. Everything, including people, persons, are configurations of many causes and conditions. And of course, while the notion of the individual has provisional existence or meaning and to take self-responsibility, the self is not fully understandable without taking into account the many relationships that make up the person. And this is why many people, athletes or leaders, people that have accomplished things in various fields, they always note their indebtedness to others for achieving their success or fame and recognition. Does society endorse this? Or does the society's value say, hey, winning is everything. It's all about competition. You know, where do we nurture the humility? Are we really taking that serious as our central value in our culture? Do we need to emphasize more cooperative solutions to our problems? And seek more equitable solutions for poverty, homelessness, and various aspects of discrimination. You see, and Professor Bloom goes on to mention the famous Indra's net. Buddhism views reality and life as a great jeweled net in which each node in the net reflects all other nodes in the net. And like a little jewel at each of the nodes where the two strands cross that intersection, and it reflects all the other ones. This kind of aspect of mutual interrelationship within the totality of reality. And he said, it's not just simply an abstraction or a theoretical. Through personal self-reflection, we could really be impacted by the circle of relationships in which we nurture our lives, through our families, through our societies, through all the causes and conditions that make it possible for us to live, much less flourish, and to really see the crucialness that society cannot function without each person in one way or another providing some skill or effort. And when we see recent disasters, we got to work together to overcome these tragedies. One Buddhist perspective is that each person, you know, there's a fundamental equality, uniqueness, absolute value of each person. And at the same time, we see the uniqueness of individuals, and we're all together. We're all together is we all have Buddha nature, potentiality to realize one's own true nature. We're all equally manifestations of Buddhahood. There is a spiritual basis for human dignity and values and rights. We see this in education, where not to indoctrinate students to certain things, but say, hey, you got to develop, be allowed to develop your own capabilities, fulfill your own interests. We need a person-centered approach to education. And it's the same that the Buddha often quoted, famous quote about, hey, don't go by something and just because it's in the, written in the sutras or spoken by a famous person. You have to test it out in your own experience. We might note that the Buddha desacralized the cosmos and rejected magic, superstitious thinking. Talked about the principle of cause and effect. He never made a claim like is so common, especially in the religious field. He never made the claim his path was the absolute truth. He always said, test it out in your personal experience. Don't judge things right or wrong by an abstract standard. We have to see for ourselves whether our actions, how they affect oneself and others. And Professor Bloom ends with saying, this is not to suggest that Buddhism will magically solve all our problems, but nevertheless, in its history, Buddhism has always shown its value of humanness, nonviolence, compassionate efforts to improve life. So in the context of our current rampant individualistic and competitive life today, Buddhism can help us to better understand the togetherness significance of life, the interdependency, and our mutual responsibilities. And it could provide a spiritual basis for recommitting ourselves to the fundamental values that are the foundation of the idea of the American dream and give it a new reality in contemporary life. Well, well, that's all for today's broadcast. Until next time, you keep going and have a very beautiful Interdependency Day. Thank you.